I'm Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. Veteran journalist Bob Woodward is no stranger to political controversy. Best known for breaking the Watergate scandal in the 1970s, Woodward made headlines last week when it was revealed that his upcoming book, Rage, confirms suspicions that President Trump downplayed the threat of the deadly coronavirus pandemic. Woodward's decision to withhold that information for months in order to drum up interest in his new book has raised ethical questions among journalists. Woodward has since told the Associated Press that he needed extra time to verify some of the president's comments about the pandemic. But writing a book about Trump isn't exactly a novel concept. Rage is one of more than 1,200 books that have been published about the Trump presidency, from exposés by veteran journalists like Woodward to the flood of memoirs from political insiders, including National Security Advisor John Bolton and Trump's own niece, Mary Trump. So we know a lot about the salacious details of the inner workings of the Trump administration and even the president himself. But the big question is whether these books will have any effect at the polls in November. For more, I'm joined by Aswin Soopsang, White House reporter at The Daily Beast and author of Sinking in the Swamp, and Carlos Lozada, Washington Post book critic and author of the forthcoming book, What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. Swin and Carlos, thanks for being with me.
Thank you
for having us.
Carlos, why are there so many tell-all books? I mean, I know this is what some people are calling the reality show president, but really, 1,200 seems like a lot, and more to come.
Well, if this is the reality show presidency, then you can think of these books as each being a behind the scenes of the various episodes. I think that you're seeing a lot of these books, and of course, everyone's wondering, you know, how they're going to affect the campaign and the politics of what's going on. And I think it's important to remember that sometimes what a reader brings to these books can be as significant as what a reader finds in these books. It's such a polarizing moment, and Trump's such a polarizing figure, that often you see people's reactions to these revelations sorting themselves according to their own politics. So, for instance, we learn in Woodward's book that Trump was downplaying the threat of COVID-19 early on. And if you like the president, you just see that as a sign of leadership to avoid panic. If you're a president's critic, you are appalled by that revelation. So you see that sorting just naturally happening according to where readers stand to begin with.
Oh, and there's been lots of questions about Woodward. Unlike some of the other folks who have written books, is also a journalist. And we have as journalists, we have a responsibility to deliver information to the public, particularly if it's information that could save lives. Swin, what's the response been from the Trump administration to the many, many, many books that are out there? I mean, we've seen not just Woodward, but John Bolton, his niece Mary Trump, wrote a pretty scathing tell-all for herself.
Well, when it comes to people like President Trump's niece or former National Security Advisor John Bolton or a host of former Trump quote-unquote loyalists or administration officials or fixers or lawyers who have come out publicly against him, oftentimes in book form, President Trump and his attorneys and sometimes his administration officials often employ very heavy-handed tactics to try to suppress these former loyalists who have been coming out against him. A favorite tactic of President Trump is to try to sick celebrity attorney Charles Harder on people who are coming out with tell-all books. He is, of course, the famous West Coast-based attorney who helped take down the news and gossip site Gawker. So he has that little shiny, scary-sounding metallic object to him. But often what that amounts to is Charles Harder and co. sending maybe scary-sounding letters that would work in a country if prior restraint were actually a thing that were allowed with federal law. But of course, in this country, that's not really a thing. So a big to-do was made. President Trump and his legal team and outside attorneys usually end up kicking up more publicity for the book than it would have otherwise gotten, thus getting it to probably sell more. And then the book comes out anyway, and then there's not much the president can do because so many of the NDAs that he has had people sign during his political rise and before his political rise turn out to be legally completely unenforceable. They might as well have been written on a McDonald's napkin, except it probably cost him a lot more money to make up than it had if it had been written in crayon. So that's usually where we're at with this. And otherwise, you see a lot of messaging from the administration and the White House and a lot of rage tweeting from the president that he gets so little loyalty from people who he routinely demands the most loyalty from.
Rage tweeting, such a 2020 thing, Swin. Carlos, I'm wondering, you've written a book about the books, the Trump books that we've seen since he took office. When you look at these 1,200 or so books and more that are to come, how do you characterize the substance? I mean, are we seeing specific subgenres emerging? Are some of them more journalistically credible than others?
Yes, I've read somewhere between 150 and 200 of them, which feels like a lot until you realize there's, like you say, around 1,200 of these books out.
Still a heroic effort, I would say.
Thank you. I think you see a few core traits and a few core subgenres. Those subgenres are sort of the very personal insider memoirs, you know, people who are saying, I was there, this is what I saw. Then the journalistic accounts that are more sort of character and narrative driven. And finally, the kind of analytical ones that try to tell you one big story or point about the president. One thing that runs through a lot of them is the focus on the sort of erratic and impulsive nature of decision making by the president, and just his ignorance of how government really functions. And then you see the people around him, right, who are either shocked and bothered by it, who embrace it, or just like a lot, just kind of slowly learn to live with it. And the final trait I would point to is that there's almost this contest for who can have the crazier anecdote in their Trump book. And I blame that on Michael Wolff, whose Fire and Fury had a lot of these moments, you know. So you learn that, you know, Trump had an enemies list and that the enemies were all people like in his administration, or that he was building a moat with alligator. He wanted to build a moat with alligators on the border, or that, you know, people steal documents off the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, hoping he'll just forget about them. And so you see this kind of competition for who can have the most, you know, Chiron ready, you know, crazy story to tell.
Swin, let's talk about Woodward's Rage book for a second. What do you make about the sort of ethical decision, or some would say unethical decision, to withhold information about the pandemic for months?
Well, as someone who has a little bit of experience with this, because I've written a book about Trump and Trump World before that came out in February, there are various reasons of why you might want to hold something for a book instead of your daily journalistic output that have nothing to do with personal financial profit. That could include certain agreements you've struck with sources or anonymous sources who will tell you, oh, I will tell you this juicy thing or this bit of information or this thing about a policy discussion, but I'm too close to it right now, so it has to wait for a story either years or many months down the line, or maybe I'll tell you it for a book.
Well, Swin, to that point, though, I just want to interject, because Woodward did tell Margaret Sullivan of the Washington Post that he did not have a formal agreement with the president to hold off on publishing interviews in real time. So, you know, given the fact that there are different types of sort of on the record, off the record, when to publish things, you know, given that information, I mean, do you think differently about it?
Woodward has said that he explicitly did not have any such agreements when it came to this. And look, like, not to go too deep into it, but if we're talking about ethical discussions and journalistic ethics when it comes to Bob Woodward books, we're not going to stop at the current one. His last book, Fear, which was also about the Trump White House, had lengthy sections and chapters on the inner workings of former White House aide Rob Porter. But when it came time to discuss his spousal abuse allegations, rather brutal allegations that got him ousted from Trump World, Woodward reduces that to less than a footnote, and you can argue actually paints it in kind of a semi-flattering way to Rob Porter. So now, that might suggest that Rob Porter was a top anonymous source for Bob Woodward, and thus he was giving him some sort of special treatment. So when it comes to ethical discussions at Bob Woodward, I'm sorry, the the well is far deeper than just this one book.
Carlos, thinking about, again, we were talking about the sort of hundreds and hundreds of books that have been written about this Trump administration rage, Woodward's latest, and as Swin mentioned, the others are just a drop in that bucket. What's the purpose of these tell-alls? Because I think part of the reason, part of the reaction I'm seeing, Carlos, is that people are saying, so what? We knew this already. You know, tell us something we didn't know. Is that generally, I mean, what's the purpose of this? To get to provide information, to try to turn folks away from the president? Doesn't seem to be working, at least.
Right. I don't think that the purpose, especially of the journalistic accounts, are necessarily to turn people, you know, in favor of the president or against the president. The purpose is to attempt to inform. And what we do with that information is up to individuals as voters and as citizens. And so to imagine that a book, you know, fails or succeeds if it necessarily, you know, turns some portion of the population in favor of the president or against him is sort of the wrong yardstick, I think. And, you know, but you do see these books influencing the presidential race in some moment. For instance, Vice President Biden has already incorporated some of the Woodward reporting into his criticisms of the president. But I would think that kind of bar is a little unfair for these books. These books are there to give us information, in some cases information that dovetails with what we've been hearing from reporters all along.
And Carlos, do these books have appeal to readers? Are some of the risks here that there will be just too many Trump books and readers might just, you know, lose interest or muddle a message, you know, if there are just so many books coming out about the same topic?
Well, that's what publishers and people who follow the book industry have been saying for the last few years, that clearly there will come a point where people will just be sick of these books, right? And where, you know, they'll turn away and want to read something else or, you know, read nothing about this at all. And we keep failing to get to that moment, right? Right now, books like Disloyal by Michael Cohen and Rage by Woodward and Compromise by the former FBI agent Peter Strzok are selling exceedingly well. So there still seems to be tremendous appetite for these kinds of books among the reading public. You know, part of that may be that a lot of folks are stuck at home during the pandemic and may as well read books. But I think that especially as you're getting closer to the election, the appetite is only going to increase rather than diminish.
Swin, have you found that there are certain books that are more useful? And again, we can apply that word liberally here. But do you find that there are some that have been more informative, more successful, more useful than others?
That is a good question. Typically, when there are these Trump insider accounts or fallen Trump insider accounts, when it's people who are clearly bitter or disillusioned or believe or conveniently now publicly believe that Donald Trump is now an existential racist authoritarian threat to the Republic. But yet five and a half minutes ago, we're more than happy to serve at his feet. People like, I don't know, Omarosa Manigault-Newman or John Bolton or Michael Cohen. It does strain credulity quite a bit, if not a lot, to believe that everything in the book should be taken as the word of God. Yes, these allegations, some of them rather explosive in these tell-alls. Again, Bob Woodward's is, of course, different because, as you said, he's a veteran Washington Post reporter. He's not a former senior administration official. But I useful might not be the right word for it, but I'm not it's a bit trickier when it's a former loyalist. And you have to aggressively vet the information because oftentimes you get into a situation where there's a sort of a public relations standoff where Trump and his administration and his lawyers, or current lawyers, I should say, will say that this author who used to be a buddy of mine is a rapacious liar and nothing in the book should be believed and just dropped in the Barnes & Noble fiction section immediately. And then the author will say, Donald Trump and his cronies are serial liars and you can't believe anything that they're saying about me or anything else. And the problem is, ultimately, both sides of those debates end up being true.
Swin, I wanted to pick up a little bit on what we were just talking about in terms of who is writing these books. I mean, when we talk about the books that are written by former staffers, other than money, is there any incentive to do this? You know, is it somehow a way to correct their own personal record and say, look, I did this, but I didn't know what I was doing? Or what's the benefit in it for folks who were insiders?
Well, besides money, if you want to take their explanations or a lot of their explanations at face value, you know, wink, wink, it's that, oh, they've had a coming to Jesus moment. I went in there thinking I could do some good, or I believed in this man, but I was wrong to do so. And now I see him as a racist in personality and policy, or I see him as someone who's dismantling a republic's liberal democracy piece by piece. Or I now believe all the women who are coming out against him saying he's a sexually assaulting fiend. We could go on all day. So for some of them, they are at least publicly saying that they've found a moment of moral clarity, and this is what they're doing, not just against Trump, but the people or the family around him, to expose who they really are. Now, I find that a generally, not always, but a generally less convincing argument than the ones about personal financial gain or personal media visibility, or maybe shots at a different career path, or just plain old good old public relations, because you've gotten to a point where the administration and the world and social and political orbit around Donald J. Trump has just gotten so toxic or so shambolic that you need a moment to publicly state, look, not all of us were bad. I'm trying to be the John Dean or the something like it of the Trump era. And sometimes it works, more often it doesn't, because sometimes the play is just so transparent. But maybe I'm being too cynical. No.
Well, I think that if anything, 2020 has turned many of us into cynics to a certain extent, given what's happening around us. But I mean, when you think about cynical in particular, you know, the president is somebody who we talked about a little earlier, how for decades he has gone out of his way to suppress negative stories about him. There was a lot of reporting done with his relationship with the National Enquirer and how he essentially used that as a cudgel against people who were going to, you know, unfairly or have portrayals or stories about him that were unfavorable to him. This sort of, you know, 1,200 plus books has obviously affected the president's ability to control the narrative, his own narrative, Carlos. What do you think about that? I mean, knowing what we know about the president, he can't be too excited about that.
Yes and no. I think what we know about the president also is that what he likes more than anything else is to be at the center of the story, right? And him criticizing these books that come out about him with nasty tweets and the like only amplifies their message. You know, a negative tweet is probably a marketing objective for publishers at this point, because they prove that they're getting under that the books are getting under the president's skin, and therefore, you know, oh my, there must be something juicy in them. If you even go back to The Art of the Deal, right, he says there that he'd rather be criticized by the press than ignored by the press. So he claims to really hate these books, but he loves that they keep the attention relentlessly on him. He gave Woodward, 17, 18 interviews for Rage, even after Woodward had published a highly critical book about him 2 years earlier, right? And that in part is because Trump felt that he could maybe steer this book in a more favorable direction, but also he just likes being the relentless focus. If you even look at the book titles of a lot of these books, they tend to focus on the president's own words, right? American Carnage, A Very Stable Genius, Fire and Fury. You know, they all tell us that the story of this era is wrapped up in the story of one man. And that, you know, part of that seems correct, but really a lot of the best books about the Trump era are really not about Trump at all. They're about the people around him, the conditions that gave rise to his presidency. To make it all about one guy kind of misses a larger story.
So I'm wondering, Swin, I'd love to end on this, because I'm thinking, does this change what the tell-all is going forward, the political tell-all? Or is this really a Trump phenomenon? I mean, because I don't recall this many Obama tell-alls, or I'm sure there were Clinton tell-alls, but potentially, again, I'm not sure if they reached the amount that we're seeing here. But going forward, whoever wins in November, I mean, is this the tell-all now part of the roadmap, if you will, for people who work in Washington?
I mean, I think it will be heavily correlated to how much scandal and how much tumult there is within an administration, whether that's a future Biden administration or Hawley administration or Harris administration. I mean, the reason there is so much money to be made in writing a quote-unquote insider account of the Trump White House or the chaos in the Trump campaign or what have yous is because of how grotesquely politically seedy and just like blisteringly chaotic a lot of this seems, and also how a lot of the scandal and the impeachment and the gigantic policy missteps and blunders, especially in the context of something like the coronavirus pandemic, is generally and genuinely historic. It's not people trying to goose their TV ratings because Donald Trump is such a darkly entertaining figure. It's because these things actually do matter and are huge crisis points in modern American history. So I think if, like, look, you made the point that the Obama era had far fewer, if any, of these books. I think that also goes towards the personality of the president. I think he managed to piss off significantly fewer people who he employed and who worked with him in the administration. And if you look at back at the George W. Bush era, I'm sure there were more, but I can think of at least one major book that really angered Bush World that was written by, I think, a former senior spokesperson in the White House and really went hard after the Bush administration for WMD and other lies that that Republican administration was constantly trying to sell to the American people. So I think it's all circumstantial. I think if Mr. Rogers were suddenly president of the United States tomorrow, I think
one can dream, Swin. We can dream, though, right?
It's true, exactly. But yes, I think you'd have fewer like negative tell-alls about that president if that were to occur in 24 hours.
Carlos, any parting thoughts from you on that, on where book publishing goes post this current cycle of Trump tell-alls?
Even if Trump loses the election in November, there and you have Mr. Rogers or Mr. Biden in the White House, there are still plenty of books in the pipeline coming out that will come out about Donald Trump, especially as new documents are available and as additional people leave the administration. I'm looking forward to my dream would be a Tony Fauci memoir, a Don McGahn memoir, a Kirstjen Nielsen memoir. And of course, as we all know, Trump will write one too.
We'll continue to follow this story. Carlos Lozada is a Washington Post book critic and author of the forthcoming book, What Were We Thinking? A Brief Intellectual History of the Trump Era. And Aswin Soopsang is White House reporter at The Daily Beast and the author of Sinking in the Swamp. Swin and Carlos, thanks to you both.
Thank you.